Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show where two old married people sit at a dining room table. You know, someday I'm going to have theme music and that's going to get in the way of it. Anyway. Welcome back to Let's Talk About Cheers.
Thanks, Jenny. Glad to be here.
It's a place where everybody knows you're lame. We just watched two more episodes. One is called One for the Books, and one is called The Spy Who Came in for a Cold One.
Yes, both of us are pretty fairly well rested. Shorter days at work, middle of the week, but probably less tired than we were last time.
Yeah. So I'm sure we'll be great. So the theme of tonight's episode is the Battle of the Network Guest Stars.
Yes, and that was something that Jenny and I noticed in general about the first season of this show and was true of both these, which is the show is not afraid, I think we've talked about a little bit before, to bring in guest stars and have the stories somewhat revolve around them and their conflicts with the characters rather than the predominant number of episodes revolving around the conflict between characters and having no guest stars. I would just say the number of guest stars is higher in this show than it is in most shows, particularly in a first season, right?
Particularly in a first season. Almost as if that was the way they pitched it.
Yeah.
So it's like a bar and they're these regulars, but every week a new guy comes in. Yeah.
Who knows who could drop by?
Anybody could drop
and
by.
So they had a few ideas in their head for that first season, maybe, of different people and different fun that you could have people dropping by before realizing that they had lightning in the bottle and that the people that they could have the most fun with were already in the bar. And so, you know, and then the guest stars became iconic guest stars later, like, you know, Frasier at first and Robin Colcord, but these are just a guest star a week, and it's kind of it's hit or miss.
Yes. So the first one, hold on. So the first one, One for the Books, is what I would say. Well, there were two stars that
in that first one.
In that first one, two guest stars. I can't know if they're stars, but they're guest actors.
Guest actors.
And one of them was great and heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Do you want to do the quick summary of the first episode?
So this is a night at Cheers where a guy comes in and sits at the bar. He's never been at a bar before, and he's about to become a monk the next day. So he wants to have a real American man experience at a bar.
Already that sounds very hooky. Yeah. Very, very premise-y.
Yeah.
And then, you're like somewhat cynical.
Also, and this is again Time Capsule Cheers. I'm going to make it through two podcasts. A World War I veteran, a doughboy, comes into a bar, and every 10 years, he and his buddies meet in the back room and probably have been doing that since the 1890s.
Yes, it's an old man or a soldier waiting for his friends to show up at a reunion in the back room. And they keep checking in with him, and he keeps coming out wondering whether or not his friends have come. And I think we were both kind of surprised. I know I was surprised because I see a guy that old in a plot like that, and I'm thinking World War II.
Right.
Because we're used to that being the old guys, which that is not even the case anymore now. Now it's Vietnam. But World War One. Think about that.
The idea of having a guest star who fought in World War One is really mind-blowing. And it always makes me think. There was a period of time when you really loved to compare eras.
Mm-hmm.
Where you'd be like, did you know that we're as far away from 1950 to 1980?
I still love doing that. I do that almost every day. Yeah. Yes.
He really, Matt Flanagan, a man who loves to compare time.
Right. So to give you an example of that game, we are as far away from 82, 92, 2000, 2012, 30, 40, 50, 60, 17. That's 35 years as we were, and people better at math can do this better than me, but like 1947, if I'm doing that math correctly, and I might be doing it wrong. So in 1982, if you were around, you probably thought to yourself when you were a young little kid, people talked about 1947. That probably seemed ancient. They might as well have been talking about the Spanish-American War when they were talking about 1947, something you couldn't even picture. Now kids who are 10 or so picture 1982 feels the same way to them. That's how old we are, and those listening who feel that way. That's the game I play that I torture Jenny and myself with. And that was an example of that with the fact that a World War I vet could exist as a character on a TV show.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So the first episode, that thread of it was really good. And also there was a subplot or a runner, because there are no subplots really, where Diane has her little book of things people say in the bar that are the rough poetry of the blue-collar worker.
Yes.
And is writing them down, and Sam wants to get in the book, but he can't get in the book.
Yes. And overall, where would you say this ranks? I would say only the old World War II vet kept this World War I vet kept this from being a bad episode of Cheers.
I would agree.
Perhaps the worst one.
Yes.
Right? Yes. I mean, I think back, and the Toga one wasn't great, but that was probably better than this.
Yeah. Because we talked about this, like, if it had just been the World War One guy, like, life would have been revolving in the bar, and there would have been something funny with Carla, yes, there would have been this, and it would have paid off in a really heartbreaking way.
Mm-hmm.
But this other guy, this young, schlumpy-looking guy who's about to go in the bar, so you have him drinking. I'm drinking a drink.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, why are we wasting all this time with this doofus?
Right. And then in This Week in Cheers sexual harassment, he decides that he would like to kiss a real, what did he call them?
A real cheap, he kept saying a real cheap woman. I want to kiss a real cheap woman,
right.
A cheap broad.
So,
right?
Of course, he walks right over and, like, bends Diane back and starts smooching her, which counts as the second time she has been.
So she's got two physically assaulted and probably around 27 sexually harassed.
Which I suppose is not inaccurate as a waitress in a bar.
Well, it's entirely accurate from everything that we hear lately, which is awful. And also awful the extent to which none of this is in my memory. I don't look back and think, whoa, that show, man, they really had it wrong. Their people were getting sexually harassed right and left. You didn't think about it. Yeah. Just in the same way you didn't think in my time about the gay panic jokes, of which there were more of those.
There was
one of them. Yeah.
George Wendt, Norm, the World War One vet, comes up and hugs him and he goes, whoa there, Tinkerbell. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Not maligning Cheers, because it's a product of its time.
Right.
But we're just keeping this week in Sam sexual harassment, this week in Diane physical assaults, and this week in Cheers gay panic. It's something that since the beginning we notice.
Yeah, and you just notice it because a good Cheers episode, nothing takes you out of it. You're like along for the ride, and then in this moment you're like, you know.
And bear in mind, the at this point the come-ons that Sam has with Diane almost don't even fit into
right.
that category
no, they
anymore.
Don't.
Because they're so flirty, and there have been so many times where she seemed to reciprocate that it just seems like bust your balls flirting, and it doesn't seem at all like sexual harassment.
No. Only the time when he kissed her against her will rose to the level for me.
Oh, okay, so that's three physical assaults.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, that was a good episode and with a great element.
Yeah. But overall, in the lower end of the Cheers episodes. The second episode, however,
which I thought was actually going to be bad, based on the guest star.
Because you thought that guest actor was going to suck all the oxygen out of the room in the way that the guest star in One for the Book did. And this a summary of this episode would basically be... You're so good at them. I asked
a very well-cultured man comes in and sits down and lets it slip to Carla that he's a spy. And Carla is quite taken with him, but Diane isn't having it and basically busts his lie up, and the guy feels terrible and walks out, and she wants to find him, and he comes back and he tells her he's a writer, so he makes stuff up. He makes stuff up all the time. I'm a writer. And then she overcorrects, as I have been known to do, actually. I recognize this with sort of an embarrassed thrill. gets on the phone to like the Atlantic or something, and it's like, I have the poet of the century for you, Mr. Whoever. Please stop talking to John Updike.
College, yeah.
And so he is reciting poetry, your best poem, and he recites it into the thing. And then Coach, this weekend Coach, Coach comes out and finishes the poem because, of course, he's one he heard it from the nuns. Right, so yeah, the guy's also a plagiarist.
The joke was. And I always used to, I remember the nuns always used to make it say us. I used to tear up. Oh, why? Because you love the poetry? No, because they used to hit us with beads. That was funny.
And so then the guy is revealed. He reveals himself to be a real very rich man and offers to buy the bar from Sam for $2 million. And Sam by this point is laughing and rips up the check. And then the guy's driver comes in and says, your private plane is ready, sir. And here are the documents from Geneva. And everybody like dives for the check. But the,
so in the way you describe it, it sounds stupid.
Yes.
And one can see why in the beginning you might think it was stupid. I have a few different other very obvious reasons for
that. First Cheers where I looked at my phone.
Yes, obvious reasons for that. But I think what got you in the end, one, it was a Christmas episode.
Yes.
And this guy was lying. And so all the episode was kind of about like faith or belief in things you know aren't true and stuff right. like that. And Diane being the cynic and always having to call things out that other people just want to believe because sometimes you want to believe in something. Right.
Like how and people also, are listening to this podcast.
Yes, we want to believe it's going to be good, and we keep getting cheers instead of tell it anyway. But good, good one. But another thing I think that made it work was the commitment by Sam and Diane. Like Sam, Diane was so hurt to have not believed that guy who wanted just a small thrill at Christmas time to believe that someone thought he was something more. And she felt like a horrible cynic. And you bought her emotion. And there was a bit in the end, kind of an interesting bit in the mm-hmm. arc of their love story where Diane was like, that's it. I'm not going to be taken in by any lie anymore. Anything that anybody says, I'm not just going to believe them. I'm done being gullible. I'm done being gullible with what people say. And Sam was like, and I won't do this justice, but was like, good. I think I'm falling in love with you. And then she looks at him and says, really? And he just sort of has that sort of coy look on his face as if to say, well, I guess we don't know if it's a lie or true, do we?
Know, like. And the thing that actually, and then it went cut to credits, but the thing I really loved about that line is like Ted Danson, the actor, has such an easy manner about him. And mm-hmm. he goes 90% of any given episode not giving a shit about anything. Like just
yes.
his long, mm-hmm. lanky legs and leaning against the bar and just like, whatever. And he's the guy who knows it all. And he's just very laid back. And then he delivers a line like that, like, I think I'm falling in love with you. And it's like, holy shit, like the energy and the intensity that like appears.
Everything is pulled into his orbit.
Everything is pulled into, yes, it's a very good way of putting it. I was just like, oh, Mary.
Diane, the people watching, male or female, everything.
And it like, I think it's easy when you see the hair, the Ted Danson mm-hmm. hair, the polo that you're starting to recognize the sweaters and the polos and everything. And you're just like, oh, cheers. Ha ha ha. Sexual harassment, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Nelly, when you see that honesty delivered in one line that pays off the whole episode and also advances their rapidly developing scenario, mm-hmm. it's really impressive.
So I think the commitment of those two actors, once again, is what took an episode that could have been a subpar episode and made it an above-average episode. Yes, or too broad.
Which is what the monk one was. Yeah, the monk one was too broad.
And what the spy one was. One thing I found that was interesting for the spy one is I bet that played slightly better in the beginning in its day, because now when we think of spies, we know the Bourne identity. Mm-hmm. And
like no spy would ever walk into a bar.
Like CIA now. Yeah. And like just the badass homeland. You know? So Jenny's right. No spy would ever walk into a bar and say, well, if you must know, I'm a spy.
Yes.
But in the era coming out of the 70s, pre-Sean Connery, Roger Moore, I'm a spy, you could believe that more. And you could believe people hanging on a guy's word because that was your idea of what a spy was then. Yeah. But now it just seems like cartoonish. You know,
And it's okay that you thought he was faking because then he revealed himself to be, quote, a writer.
Yes.
He was also lying about that.
And that's when you started to feel the plot a little bit. Yeah. It was okay.
Yeah.
You know?
So, it really was interesting at how a good guest star can make an episode and a subpar one can break one. Because mm-hmm. I would say that the one where Shelley, where Diane's friend showed up and wanted to sleep with Sam was, she was pretty subpar.
Subpar. And that was another one that almost sunk the whole episode, that like this one, as it went on, was only saved by that physical bit in the end where Sam was flipped onto the pool table by... Oh, no, that was the one where they fell onto the couch together and were wrestling, right? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that part I find really amazing. Oh, but there's another woman we have to discuss.
Yes.
She comes at the very beginning, and she's Matt's woman of mystery.
Wait, what? Okay. At the very beginning of the first episode?
Of every episode.
Oh, yes. All right. You're right. This is a game we play. If you watch Cheers, if you're watching Cheers along with us, there is a moment.
All
at the
five
beginning
of you.
We're at like 12. Well, wait, no, we are at like 11 now or what?
Well, we've watched 11 episodes, but we're at five podcasts.
Five podcasts, 11 episodes. We've watched the first 11 episodes, and you are listening to and watching the credits. There is a point when... At the beginning,
the cold open.
Cold open. At the beginning of the credits, rather, where it's live
action.
Yes,
after the cold open.
Oh no, after the cold open.
I thought you said you was okay. Spider.
No, I'm just saying the moment right before the credits start after the cold open. Yes. Right. Yeah. Okay. I thought you said you was okay, Spider. To me, I invented. I thought you said you was okay, Spider.
Goodfellas reference for all of you who are confused.
Do I need to explain that?
After.
Okay. After when?
After Cheers.
That's our next podcast. After Cheers. After talking Cheers.
It's called Frasier.
Right.
Sorry.
It's called Frasier.
Very tired. No,
there is a moment when the live action video of the credit credit sequence switches over to the paintings that we know very, very well. And there is a woman who is a tiny woman, and she's walking along the sidewalk, and she's carrying a briefcase.
She's
can't
only
make out her
tiny
face.
Because they're shooting her from across the street.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying she's a tiny woman. Like, this tiny woman that you may have never noticed in the credits. No, from our vantage point, across the street, she looks tiny, and you can't make out her face. Did you think that I thought she was a tiny woman, and that's why I was amazed? Where do we find this tiny woman? No, I understand perspective. It's a woman from across the street, very tiny, and they fade into the painting, and she becomes an old-timey woman, like in a long frock. But I'm wondering, where is this woman? Does anybody in the world, is there someone related to this tiny woman who's in every episode of Cheers? Probably the only person outside of Ted Danson who's in every episode of Cheers.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Face. Does she know she's in the credits to Cheers? Did she die? Is there any family that knows about her? Do any of you, of the one or two people listening out there, do you know of this tiny woman? If anybody can find out who this tiny woman is, knows a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, I want to know, because I think it's kind of interesting and spooky.
Internet? Go. So she's wearing a white blouse and a blue skirt, and then it transmogrifies. Carrying a briefcase, and it transmogrifies into the old timey
painting
picture that is painted.
Yeah.
We do have to explain. I thought you said.
Jenny, when I have a thing. Where whenever two people are talking at the same time, both trying to explain themselves,
I
was trying to say one of those moments. There's a moment in Goodfellas, perhaps a lot of you remember it, where the actor Michael Imperioli, mm-hmm. who would one day go on to be Christopher Moltisanti on The Sopranos, he played a character named Spider, who was serving all the mobsters, including Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro. And Joe Pesci is complaining, and he says, Spider, what's wrong with you? He's using worse language than me. And he's like, why didn't bring me a drink? Why don't you bring me a drink over here? I'm sitting here, I'm thirsty, why? And Michael Imperioli, before we even knew him from The Sopranos, says, "No, I thought you said you was okay, Spider, But Joe Pesci keeps talking. And it's like, what are you talking about? Being okay, Spider. What are you saying? I asked for my drink. No. I didn't say nothing. No. I thought you didn't say nothing to me. No. I thought you was okay, Spider. So now, whenever one of those moments occurs, I start going, no. I thought you say you was okay, Spider. I hope that was worth it for you. And I can hope you can use it in your everyday life.
But also, it represents the anti-Cheers. That bar.
That's the bar
where everybody knows your name is gonna kill you.
It's not a place you want to go. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Very, very astute, Jenny. Very astute. Yeah.
So, was there anything else in this episode, these two episodes, that made you that made anything stand out to you?
One thing, or at least the first thing I think of, I brought up to you, which was, these episodes are such like plays. Each act rarely cuts away to anything else, even like within the same scene. They like cut away to reaction shots and stuff that they have. But there are so many people at the bar of Cheers. The whole cast essentially is being paid to be in the whole episode, it seems like, because they're always there, either on bar stools or off in the corner continuing their conversation. And that's very much like a play. Now it almost seems like more often they'll be like, well, we don't want to spend money paying a person for this day of shooting. So, you know, and even in a multicam, look, I know in a multicam, they shoot all over 1 5-hour period and get everybody in, but it has a different feel to it. I mean, it's not like every act feels like a one act play, and there's a ballet to the characters moving over and
the
crossing
blocking is incredible.
And going to themselves and then arcing around and serving customers. And it is like you're watching a play about a bar every act, and everybody's got this blocking, which is in a way, even though, like, say, Friends is a multi camera or Big Bang Theory, you're not forever watching a long scene of Sheldon going around and walking and going around the couch, and then it's like 15 minutes of that.
The absolute antithesis of that kind of time taken is Modern Family.
Yes.
Modern Family has honed the art of how late can you get into a scene and how early you can get out of it. But you lose that. Like, a perfect example is at the beginning of, I think, One for the Book, when one of the customers asks Coach to go upstairs to Melville's and check and see if their table's ready.
Yes.
And so Coach does this is in the cold open, by the way, does this extended, like,
also this week in Coach.
Yeah. Oh, this week in Coach, walks over to the coat rack, takes off his apron, puts on the jacket, straightens his tie, fixes his hair, walks upstairs, beat, beat, walks back downstairs, takes off the jacket, puts on the apron, walks over and says, what was that name again? They tell him, and then he goes over and he takes off the apron and puts on the thing. And this is all in the cold open, and it's all silence.
They wait a long time to pull the trigger.
It's an incredible, it's an incredibly confident choice.
And, you know, you expect not to see it in single cameras, because that's the purpose of moving around really fast, or one of them. But even in, I feel like, multicams, you do not see this kind of ballet and longer scenes anymore as much as you did then.
No. And I would actually be interested, the five of you, Patrick, do you know of any reason why? Like, there's got to be a book, right? Or have we just not read the book about Cheers?
Patrick McCarthy, who will be on our finale two episodes, Cheers expert, TV expert, worked on so many shows, has said there is an interview somewhere that he watched. He's like, I remember because it took me a long time to get through it, where it is a 4.5-hour interview of Glenn and Les Charles. Mm. And they talk about Cheers at great length and all of these decisions. And I would love to see it. I'd love to find out. Yeah,
watch that in our podcast. After Cheers.
After Cheers is Frasier, then we have to After Cheers.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to hear a funny story about people who wanted to do a Frasier podcast?
Yes.
Okay. So two guys walked into my office a year and a half ago, maybe, when I was still working out of my amazing mythical office that I want to go back to. And a friend of a friend.
I remember that. There was a show done there.
What was that show? Tell It Something? Anywho.
It's lost to the ages.
Yeah. Okay. So word got out that I had a little mini podcasting studio, and a really nice guy named Jordan came up with his friend Alex, and they wanted to do sort of a very arch podcast that was all about Fraser Crane. And it had sort of an ironic comedic spin on it. It wasn't just like we're going to talk about like the episodes of the TV show Fraser. It had like the kind of podcast that two comedy guys would come up with where they just always talk about Fraser. As if he, I don't even remember the concept. But I sat there while they piloted it and I was like, oh, I don't know. This doesn't seem to be coming together. But I did notice that the one guy was very, you know, he was comedically savvy. He was kind of like laid back in his chair like he was doing this on his spare time. And then they never came back. And then literally 3 months later, the guy that was Alex that was sitting there in the chair got cast on Saturday Night Live and now plays one of the Trump brothers.
Amazing. Yeah, and he's doing a heck of a job, too.
So, yeah, he's doing a heck of a job. And so, of course, he is not doing a podcast about Frasier.
So, did they continue their podcast about Frasier?
No, because the guy got on Saturday Night Live.
I thought he was a guest. He was one of the main players.
No, he was going to be one of the main players.
Oh, that's so funny that you can
instead of doing
a podcast about Frasier to being on Saturday Night Live.
No, a podcast about Frasier that never even aired.
To being on
Saturday
Night Live.
Never even got past its pilot.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
To go to SNL.
My God. That's like a former Letterman writer doing this.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Could you ever, you wouldn't live long enough to do a podcast called Let's Talk About Letterman.
Oh, God.
Like, well, you would have to pass it on to your children.
Would be so, because every night, but it wouldn't be worth doing the episodes.
Would it?
It would be worth talking about the experience of Letterman, I think.
Right.
Just figuring out as much, you know, that is endlessly fascinating, I think. That strange culture.
Right.
But and it probably would for some people, but oh man, that would be so exhausting.
It'd have to be a crowdsourced project. Like they'd be doing it on Mars.
Yeah.
It would take so long.
Yeah.
Like what if you did I'm trying to think of all the shows you could do every episode of, like that you would never live past the end of. Saturday Night Live, The Simpsons.
Yeah, The Simpsons. Oh my God. The Simpsons would be so
you would just
hard.
Die. You'd be in like the 11th season.
This one's hard enough. This
I
one's
know.
Hard. 11 seasons. That's mm-hmm. MASH, you know? Like that's
no.
That's pretty damn long. In fact, what are the long? I mean, I guess it would be hard to do it for ER.
Green Acres.
Good Grey's Anatomy would be tough.
Oh, I'd love to do one for Grey's Anatomy.
We'll have fun with that.
Dear Shonda Rhimes, there's got to be like 6 Grey's Anatomy podcasts, though. I look right
is,
now.
Yeah.
Not any other Cheers episodes.
There isn't. Mm-mm. Interesting. Well, I'm excited about
that. We are in
that.
Incredibly original
that's why
derivative
I think
space.
That is so smart. Incredibly original derivative space. It's so dead on. That is why. If there's only one, though, we need to, and when I say we, I mean all you.
Yep.
Yep. That's the math Flanagan way. No, I'll help in any way I can. I have no skills.
Except
I have
for editing, post-production, or uploading, or social media.
Or composing.
But anything else
you need.
Right there.
You know?
Okay.
Like anything. Fetching. Soft drinks.
Yep.
That I can help you with.
Yep, that's fair.
Music, as I was going to say. Yeah. If we're the only one, we should figure
music.
Out... Music, and over the course of this, we will figure out, and we're already doing it with, I think, this week in sexual harassment and coaches' corner and stuff like that, little things that we'll continue to talk about, but we could organize those with, it's just so hard, because one of the reasons we're doing this is we loved doing Tell It Anyway, but it was killing Jenny, the editing. She did such a good job editing it.
I did it. Now that I work in public radio, what I know is I did a terrible job.
Oh, okay, but effort-wise,
yeah,
and musically, like putting everything in, just like cutting things down because they ran so long, it was a very tiring endeavor. But it came out really nice, I thought, as a layman. And so doing this was just like, oh well, we talked about it in the very first podcast. It was sort of a cold blackmail. I wanted to watch Cheers, wanted Jenny to see it. Jenny wanted to do another podcast, and here we are. But I must admit, when I listen to one of them, I do miss your particular flash for being able to place music in things, because I heard it in your life, in your job professionally, and you're like a fighter pilot with it, and I heard it in the old talent anyways, and it'd be neat to have it in this, but it can't sap your strength the way the other one did, or this starts to become arduous,
and tell then, it anyway,
and then we stop
cheers.
Doing it, and yeah. then why are we not doing tell it anyway if you yeah. know if it's taking you
you've now
18
experienced
days to produce
a
to
decent
produce,
slice
yeah.
of the conversations we have about
yes,
things we want to do.
Yeah, particularly
so,
tell it anyway.
Anyway, but I will say one thing I did do when I was mad about someone else's podcast. Sometimes you see a podcast and it succeeds so wildly you get mad. Mm. And I saw one the other night. So I did go out and make a letstalkaboutcheers.com website. So this will appear in the Tell It Anyway feed for a little while just
right.
to get people used to it. But eventually, you can't pollute your actual storytelling feed with a Let's Talk About Cheers forever. So I did go make one. So if you go to letstalkaboutcheers.com, and probably by the time you hear this, I hope I will have gotten it into iTunes and all the usual suspect places.
I mean,
but yeah,
I
you
think
know.
That's awesome. And I think, you know, ultimately, one thing that might help us one day is probably, and you know it, a musical lead-in, a musical outro, and some little thing that breaks it up in the middle.
Are you a producer?
I'm mansplaining podcast to you. I can't believe it.
Oh, my God. Should there be...
Folks, I'm not going to survive the night.
should there be signposting and also architecture?
This week in mansplaining.
Would you like to call a mid-roll and get some ads?
Let's just say, for the record, mansplaining hardly ever happens. Like, women have to deal with a lot of mansplaining in the world, but I'm not a person.
No, Matt is not
a
splainer.
Yeah. But you're right. You caught me there.
That was pretty bad. well, guys, that's been another episode of Where Everybody Knows Matt's Pretty Lame when he tries to explain podcasting to Jenny. But it is always, as ever, a great joy to talk about Cheers with you. Do, 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 do. You can't do that.
Why?
You're doing it off key. I was
Let
doing
me try it,
off key.
My best then. Okay.